Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, day one of Wimbledon is in the books, done and dusted. You find us, myself, Catherine Whittaker, David Law, Matt Roberts, at Tennis Podcast Towers, London edition. Or rather, sort of almost Wimbledon edition. We're a very short bus ride away from Wimbledon. David discovered the bus this evening.
Yeah.
Don't take cash anymore.
It was like Christopher Columbus discovering America.
That we actually got on the bus and Catherine had to talk to me like I used to talk to my kids when they were about four and said, put it here.
Well, en route to the bus stop, David had expressed anxiety about the fact that he didn't have any change.
Yes, I did do that.
And that was while Matt was making a phone call to one of his contacts about a stat upcoming in this episode, little teaser there for you. Matt's been working his contacts.
Yes. Hashtag journalism.
That was good. I know it's really good, actually.
It is. It's an interesting talking point that we'll come to over the course of this episode about attendance, which we instinctively, to us, the feel of the place, the attendance felt down today on what you'd normally expect for day one of the championships. It was great, but I think, you know, sort of post-COVID restrictions, incredible order of play. I think we and the tournament were braced for record attendances, quite frankly, and it was very far from that today. But I feel like we shouldn't start with that. I've accidentally started with that, but we will, as I say, we'll come on to it. But we should start with what was basically a really great day, I think. Slight intrusion of rain, which nobody was prepared for.
No.
BBC weather forecasts did not gear us up for the... I didn't have the appropriate outerwear.
No, neither did I. I had a half an hour walk to work today, and about 10 minutes in, it started raining. And my one blazer that I've got for the whole fortnight is getting soaked. That's not a good start.
Where was David Law to buy you an emergency umbrella when you needed him?
Imagine how Simon Briggs felt. Simon Briggs of The Telegraph, The Telegraph's tennis correspondent, obviously having a busy fortnight. He is commuting from Chelsea to Wimbledon every day by bicycle in a tweed suit. Well, he was certainly in a tweed suit today. TBC on what he wears
tomorrow. Our Instagram.
It is worth signing up for Instagram just for that, folks. Anyway, I've managed to start accidentally on the two negatives of the day. Let's row back a bit and hit some highlights, shall we? For me, a massive highlight was Ange Jabeur not losing in the first round.
Yeah, well, doing exactly what you two both had been saying she would do, which is not repeating the errors of her ways at Roland Garros. Now, admittedly, when she was in Paris, her opponent played well. That's part of the story there. But you two were adamant with me. Ange Jabeur is not going to make that mistake again. She is ready. This is different. And, well, what did she lose? Four games?
Yes, that's right. And you mentioned the opponent. I think it definitely is worth saying Bjorklund, a lot less tricky than Magda Linette, as it turns out. She didn't play particularly well, I didn't think.
Maybe she doesn't play well when Dennis is in the box.
Perhaps.
That is not a euphemism. He was there watching her for once today.
This is Denis Shapovalov, who is her boyfriend.
Yes.
Right.
So recently celebrated their 3-year anniversary.
Did they?
Learned that from Instagram as well.
Did you know all this? Mm-hmm.
The internet, David.
Can I poke for
it's
that?
It's
going to
be big. Anyway, sorry, Matt. We digress.
But yeah, I mean, having said that, Jabir was excellent. Really businesslike, on it just immediately. I think broke straight away, looking to get on the front foot, dictating the points, and just looked to be on a mission, really. It was a completely different performance to that Roland Garros one where she was hesitant and nervous and clearly feeling the pressure. She just got on with it today, and she had won inside about an hour.
She said in her press afterwards, brilliant press conference, she said she talked a lot about that French Open defeat, actually. That was the first thing she was asked about, sort of compare and contrast your experience and your feelings both now and before the match. And she, you know, she said how much of a disaster the French Open was. She's clearly done a lot of unpacking around what happened. And she said, look, I made a mistake and I don't make the same mistake twice. And she never once used the term imposter syndrome in the press conference, but she talked so much about imposter syndrome without, you know, expressly using the term. I asked her about a little more about the confidence that she had hinted at having gained about playing with Serena Williams on Zrina. I don't know why I keep saying that, because I really don't like that as a nickname, but here we are. The confidence she had gained from being Serena Williams' doubles partner last week, and I asked her where that confidence came from. Was it the actual experience of being on the court with her? Was it just the very fact that Serena had chosen her, had handpicked her out of all possible players to be her partner? And she said it was both. She said absolutely the experience of being on the court with her was massive. It was very much in her mind that she had never played with Serena never practiced with Serena. She reeled off a list of, she said, I can remember, you know, the first time I hit with Venus. I can remember hitting with Azarenka. And she said, I got a lot from all of those experiences. And I've always wanted to hit with Serena and never had the chance to. And then she said, yes, it was a very big deal for me that Serena Williams chose me. But she also sort of explained that it was also a big deal for her how she dealt and reacted to the fact that Serena chose her. She said, 3 years ago, I would have panicked and played horribly and basically not felt good enough to share the court and be partners with Serena Williams, she said. Whereas now, because of how different a place she's in confidence-wise and self-esteem-wise, I think, she felt really chuffed, but she didn't feel unworthy. And that's a massive shift for Ons Jabeur. And one of the last things she was asked about in the press conference was, you know, the fact that she's the new world number two. There's only one place, well, only one upward place to go from there. And she was pretty punchily asked whether she thought she could get to number one this year. And I thought she would moonwalk away from that question as quickly as she possibly could. And she went, look, it's going to be tough because of Świątek, but maybe. And she said, if not this year, then I'll be targeting start of next year. And I loved that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I loved it.
We often compare her to Ash Barty because of the similarities in how their games look, the style they have, the slice backhands, certainly the drop shot in Ons Jabeur's case, the really kicked first serve. I think they've got quite similar big forehands. Maybe Barty's was more reliable. But, you know, in recent times, Ons Jabeur's game has just looked more fragile and everything else can go awry. But then Barty's used to do that several years ago. And I think there's also a parallel to be drawn about the way Serena Williams talks about Ons Jabeur and the way she used to talk about Ash Barty. When Barty first came along as a 16-year-old, she played Barty, beat her convincingly and said, I really like her game. You know, and I just always remember making a little mental note of that. And then Barty took time out from the game. And I remember thinking, crikey, Serena Williams rates this woman. Please, let's hope she can figure this out. And just get the sense that Jabeur is going through probably a similar kind of mental process as well as the game, as what Barty did.
Matt went to bed last night not having completed his pre-tournament predictions. And his parting words as he shuffled off to bed were, I might go for a run in the morning and I might pick on Jabeur for the title.
Which those
and
two
then
happened?
He said Jabeur was more likely.
Okay.
Tell us what happened this morning, Matt.
I went for a run and I picked Iga Świątek to win the title. I had a reversal.
Big morning.
In my sleep. But it was the sort of performance which filled me with confidence. And look, I know it is only round one, but that in many ways felt like such a big hurdle because of what happened at the French Open. And isn't it interesting how a loss can be a defining moment for you? I remember in one of your chats you had recently, David, with Jamie Delgado for the relived pod for Friends of Tennis podcast on junior champions. It wasn't actually audio we ended up using in the podcast, but it was sort of background information that he gave. And he talked about how he faced Nicolas Lapentti and almost beat him. And yet he viewed that match really negatively because he lost. But actually, if he'd been in a more positive mental space, he would have viewed it as, I came really close to beating Lapentti, who's a good player. And I just think the way that Ons Jabeur has dealt with that round one loss at Roland Garros just kind of shows what you're talking about there in terms of that mental progression, because she's, as you said, worked through it. She realised she perhaps overplayed before the French Open. She's corrected that heading into here. She's just done a lot of things to put it behind her and yet also learn from it. And I think it's so impressive how quickly she's done all of that.
Yeah, it's brilliant to see. Now, moving on from a woman who, quote, will never be in a mix in my lifetime, to a woman who accelerated into and out of a mix in what is definitely record time. Let's talk Beatriz Haddad-Maia. You're looking at me, David, but I've been really kind to you by not leading with this, I think. We've talked about the weather. We've talked about the attendance. We've talked about Ons Jabeur.
We've mentioned
Simon Briggs.
Can we instead talk about the fact that I'm the only one out of all of us who got their prediction right today in the dailies?
No. We're going to talk about Beatriz
Haddad-Maia.
I tried. To quote Catherine's Instagram post about me.
Beatriz Haddad-Maia, David's pick for the final, if anybody hasn't listened to our preview podcast. And if you haven't listened yet, then you probably shouldn't bother, because we dedicated about 40 minutes of it to David's pick of Beatriz Haddad-Maia, who, newsflash, is out of the tournament on day one. And it's just the best thing that's ever happened. And it's not personal to Beatriz Haddad-Maia, who I wish well at every point going forward, but for the purposes of podcast lols, she has given us, along with Kai Yuvan, the victor today, just an all-time epic moment.
You're supposed to be my friend.
Well, as your friend, David, if you'd come to me and said, I'm considering picking Beatriz Haddad-Maia for the final, I would have kindly talked you out of it. But
no, you wouldn't.
Maybe I wouldn't have done. Anyway, she lost today to Kai Yuvan, is a really good player, and I don't understand why Kai Yuvan isn't quite happening.
Maybe she is now.
Maybe this is her happening.
Maybe I'll lump on her.
I almost, for the lols, and because I know Kai Yuvan's a good player, almost picked Yuvan to win today in the daily newsletter predictions. But then I looked up her recent results and she retired injured last week in Bad Homburg. So I thought, David's going to at least get one round with Beatriz Haddad-Maia. But nope, an injured Kai Yuvan still beat your final pick. Very good friends with Iga Świątek, won Youth Olympic doubles gold with Iga Świątek. Is a thing that I know about Kai Yuvan.
yes, Youth Olympics, you don't have to be from the same country, I think, to play doubles together.
Yes, she's Slovenian, but she certainly hadn't won nearly as many grass court matches this year as Beatrice Haddad Meyer, which those grass court matches did form the basis of David's prediction. David, just before we move on, please could you just summarise, you know, your thoughts, your feelings, how are you experienced today in the predictions sphere?
It wasn't my greatest day, was it? I'm trying to work out whether it was better or worse than when Petra Kvitova went out on day one and won Martin Del Potro, who were my two picks for the title in Australia about 8 years ago.
I think it's worse.
Are you piping up now, are you? What's your
people
justification?
People were talking about it in the press seats on Centre Court, David, when I sat down. People were leaning over going, is David seen what's going on Court 12?
You would not believe the number of messages and tweets that came my way.
David was getting trolled by Pam Shriver.
More people were in touch with me about it than were in touch with Kaya Juvan after winning the blummin' match.
It's delicious. Matt, being the dedicated and professional reporter that he is, went over to Court 12.
Yeah, I was accused of doing that for mocking purposes, but, you know, someone had been picked to reach the final and was in danger of going out. Follow the story. That is clearly the place to be.
He sent a very smug photo while he was following the story.
All I'm going to say is this is a call to action to people on Twitter. Please be atting David about Haddad Meyer in 3 years' time in the same way people still do to me about Kuzmova.
Is she even in the draw?
Don't think so, because no one's added me.
Is she in the country? No.
We'll move on now, David. Thanks. I'll allow you a moment's respite. Can't promise it won't come up again, but no. For now, we move on to Emma Raducanu.
I've never even seen her play.
All right, we don't want to move on to Emma Raducanu.
I mean, I'm trying to work out. I did this.
It's a bad one,
I was
David.
Not,
it's a really bad
it's
one.
It's a real low point,
I was
David.
Sober as a... You know, there was nothing going on. I wasn't tired. I'd woken up. I had had plenty of sleep. I felt good. I looked through the draw. It all made sense to me. And yet,
This is the low point.
Move on to Raducanu.
Emma Raducanu made her centre court debut today, and she won 6-4, 6-4 over Alison van Ooytvanck. It was a patchy first set from both players. Really, it was a ever so slightly strange atmosphere inside centre court. It was second on after Novak Djokovic against Kwon Soon-woo, who we'll talk about that match shortly. But it wasn't full when Emma Raducanu walked out. It was a good reception, but the atmosphere built over the course of the match. And it was good, you know, and at times it was great. But I was expecting it to be spine-tingling and electric in there. She was one of the biggest sporting stories in my lifetime in this country. This is her first time on centre court, her first time playing Wimbledon since becoming a Grand Slam champion. The first time almost everybody inside that centre court will have seen her. I was expecting it to be an extremely memorable moment. And it was really great. I was glad I was there and I was impressed with Emma Raducanu. And I guess this, the problem perhaps was my expectations rather than what ended up transpiring, which was really, really good. It just wasn't spine-tingling.
No. And at no point in either the Emma Raducanu or Andy Murray matches, which were second and third on centre court today, neither point in any part of those matches was it completely full. There were green seats on view at points in both matches, and I really was surprised by that. And I think, look, we'll get on to the attendance a little bit later, and I think that something did happen today a little bit, in some way. It must have done. But I got to watch it with you, Catherine, for a set and a half in the press seats, and actually that was a brilliant experience, because so rarely have I ever been in centre court in the open. I'm usually... Look, it's a wonderful position, low down behind a commentary box window, or I've been watching on TV. Those are the two things that I've tended to do here at Wimbledon. And you get a different sense by being out there, what it's like for the player, actually. That's the thing that occurs to me more than anything, is when you're actually in the stadium in the open air, you get to feel a bit more of what the player must feel. And first of all, I thought Emma Raducanu was excellent. I thought her intensity from ball one was great. We were having a little debate about the view that, is it good to be getting pumped up from kind of ball one? And our instinctive reaction was, yes, it is. And I think in particular in this instance, I feel like she needed to punch her way through the nerves and all the hype and all the pressure and just be in her own bubble and get excited and get enthused. And that's what she was doing. I thought she handled the game of Van Ooytvanck very well, because it's a tricky game to deal with. It's low bounces and drop shots and pushed balls, and you don't quite know what's coming next. And she just had the foundations of her game, keeping low, absorbing stuff, getting her feet to the ball. It was all there. She didn't look physically impeded out there at all. She had to withstand about a 13-minute service game in the second game of the match. There was a lot of pretty tough moments she had to come through. But to beat Van Ooytvanck 6-4, 6-4, with all that's going on, I think it's mightily impressive. And just the final thing I'd say about that, being in the stadium, I did wonder, we tend to watch matches with the media circus in mind, with what people are saying, looking at Twitter, looking at newspapers, hearing the radio, watching the TV, and I'm sure all of our listeners do the same. I wondered whether Emma Raducanu and these type of players in this position are just able to shut themselves off from it. Because when she's out there, she doesn't know anything like that's going on. I could see she almost looked happy to be out there, because she doesn't know about any of that. And if she's able to kind of give her phone away to people to look after and just stay away from the TV, maybe it's possible to just enjoy being a tennis player for 2 weeks and kind of get the best out of Wimbledon. And I think maybe I didn't realise that that might be possible. And I think she's showing it probably is.
Well, I think one thing she has shown in her sort of year-long career now, it feels like we're coming a bit full circle with her back at Wimbledon, is that she's a big match player. And she referenced that, I think, in her press conference today, talking about the fact that, yeah, she felt good on the court. She enjoyed it.
Buzzing,
she embraced
she?
It. She was buzzing. Mm. And we have seen that if we look at the slams. She's never lost in the first round at a slam. And obviously what she did at Wimbledon and the US Open last year, you know, that speaks for itself. But even this year in the slams, the fact that she's got through that opening round each time, when there's been tremendous uncertainty around her going into each of those slams, I think does show that she raises her game in these big tournaments, even if we've only got sort of five of them to look at so far. And if she's physically okay, which I didn't see much of this match, but those seem to be the reports, she's got a good draw, and it does become workable, I think, from here. I think this was, in many ways, such a tricky opening test.
I actually think today was a massive win for Emma Raducanu. I'm relieved, and I'm so pleased for her. I think the negatives of losing outweighed the positives of winning. You know, the headlines were already written in pencil for her loss today, you know, limping off court, whatever that loss might have looked like. And for her to have avoided that and done it with the grit that she did, I thought that the forehand looked a bit shaky in the opening set. That's the shot that is sort of the barometer of how she's feeling and where her game is. But she really started hitting through it and putting her weight into it, getting such a cleaner, more purposeful strike on the forehand in the second set. And I think it's massive, and I'm chuffed for her. She's got Caroline Garcia next, which is, I mean, who knows what to expect at any point in time from Caroline Garcia. But, you know, that's tricky. Garcia's just won a grass court tournament in Hamburg. I would have Raducanu as the favourite for that. But it's tricky, to use a Matt Roberts-ism.
One of the few players she has played. They met in Indian Wells, and Raducanu won in three sets.
She was very good that day in Indian Wells. Just very quickly, Molly McElwee did a piece today in The Telegraph about the coach, sort of very much in the shadows coach that Emma Raducanu has been spotted with on the practice courts this week at Wimbledon. And it actually sounds like been in the background a lot recently, and was one of her childhood coaches, worked with her a lot during her development. And that's Jane O'Donoghue, who as soon as I saw her name, I thought, where do I know that name? And Jane O'Donoghue versus Venus Williams was the first match I ever watched on centre court.
Wow.
After queuing overnight on the Monday night ahead of the Tuesday of the championships in 2002 on the pavement with no tent. I did have loving and protective parents. It was just a moment of moment of madness from everyone that was allowed to happen. I saw Venus Williams, the defending champion, come out day two, 2002, and she took on plucky Brit Jane O'Donoghue, and it lasted 45 minutes.
Well, and there was a lot of hype around that. I mean, I think she won two or three games or something like that, you know, and she was just outclassed, as a lot of people are against Venus Williams. But Emma spoke quite in depth about their relationship and how important she's always been there for her, she said, and she's by the sounds of things, made a heck of a success of her life post tennis. She's been part of the LTA setup and all the rest of it for a while, but then has also, you know, created a business life for herself as well. And yeah, and classic Raducanu, really interested in that side of things and picking her brains about that as well. There's so much more to her than just a tennis player.
I just, on a very basic level, I'm so pleased that she's got a female presence in her team.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, she's a 19-year-old girl. It's really difficult being a 19-year-old girl, and pleased that she has that female energy around her. What else happened in the bottom half of the women's draw today? Well, because of the aforementioned rain, quite a few matches were cancelled, both men's and women's first-round singles matches. Those that did get played were Angelique Kerber beating Kristina Mladenovic. She was not in the mood to hang around, Angelique Kerber. She won the first set 6-love in about 18 minutes, I think, and she was on course for the double bagel. And then suddenly Mladenovic is 3-all, and it looks like the momentum swung completely. But in the end, Kerber just... She's so good on grass, Kerber. Mm. She's a real sight to behold.
And I mean, she ended up being beaten by Ash Barty last year, and you could imagine her causing all sorts of trouble again here. There's not so much to lose for her, is there? She's already won the title, you know. We don't know. I get the feeling she's just wringing out every last drop of being a tennis player and enjoying it, and that makes her dangerous.
I love to watch her on grass. It's brilliant. The second seed unexpectedly won today. Annette Contaveit beat Bernarda Pera.
She's had a tough time, you know, Contaveit. I was reading that she'd had COVID and it had lasted for, you know, she'd had, I don't know whether you'd say she'd had long COVID, but she certainly had lingering COVID for a while and it had taken it out of her.
Didn't
I was
know that.
Reading her press conference transcript, and it sounds as though she's had a pretty tough time.
Wow. Gosh, well, I'm pleased for her that she got a win today then. It looks to me like she's pleased to be back here and pleased to be playing on grass, and it feels like in theory to me she should have a decent enough game for grass, but she's just had such a tough year, it's difficult to see her do anything of note. But goodness me, wish her well. Diane Parry, remember her?
Oh yeah, I do.
Lovely backhand,
not one of Matt's top five, but a lovely backhand,
not even in the top 10 by the looks of Matt's face.
Would it be top 10?
I don't know. I've been put on the spot.
Needs some time.
Needs some serious
thought.
You know,
it took 6 months for him to come up with the five.
Yeah.
Come on.
And that five is, it's laminated. She did Seeds Everywhere a favour today and beat Kaya Kanepi.
Oh, yeah, she sure did.
Mm.
Kaya Kanepi is the only person in the world who draws Diane Parry, with all respect to Diane Parry, and goes, oh, no. You know, I wanted Iga Świątek. I wanted Simona Halep.
So true. I'm pleased, though, that Diane Parry has not disappeared after the French Open.
I mean, she's the sort of player you want to watch a lot more of. Her and Hugo Gaston, if you're into your French
I think
players.
He plays tomorrow. I almost picked him to lose, but then decided against.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
On to the men's draw, and a few interesting ones today in the men's draw. Carlos Alcaraz, just in a casual 4-hour, 14-minute epic, beating Jan Lennard Struff in 5 sets. Matt was watching, or certainly watched a lot of it. What a way for him to introduce himself to the Court One crowd, Matt.
Yeah, amazing, and they really did take to him, and I think that's one of the things about Alcaraz, is that he knows he plays really exciting tennis.
I love that.
He said in his press conference, particularly in the Spanish portion, that his tennis is dynamic and fun, and therefore he thinks that the crowd really, you know, kind of go with him. And that was definitely the energy on court one as he made this comeback against Jan Lennard Struff, because I really thought he was going out. To be honest, he was 2-1 down. Struff was bringing it in the way that he can when he's serving well, and he's just all his momentum is moving forward in the court, and he just imposes himself and his power, and he looked the much bigger presence. Alcaraz looked quite kind of small compared to Struff. And that was, it was almost reassuring in a way to me that Alcaraz was struggling on grass, because he's so exceptional, he's so exciting, and yet it was like tennis's natural defences of a different surface were like, yeah, you still got to crack this, Carlos. And, of course, he's so brilliant, he did manage to come through, and he did sort of get better as the match went on. I think in the end, he won it. I mean, lots of reasons. One of them was physically. He seemed the physically stronger, even though I've said that about Struff being so imposing. Alcaraz was just, you know, he's a teenager, isn't he? He had so much energy, even deep in the fifth set. He's now won 5 of his 6 5-set matches that he's ever played. The only one he lost was that final set tiebreak to Berrettini in Australia. He's very, very good, even in deciding sets. And I don't think he's cracked grass. You know, he said that there are players in the tournament who are better on grass than he is. He talks a lot about how the movement is still something that he says it doesn't come in just a day. You know, you can't just crack the movement on grass in a day. You need time. And he hasn't had that many matches. So that's definitely something to look out for with him. He's served exceptionally well. 30 aces, the most he's ever served, I believe. But generally, the one thing I would say is that great players can just suddenly produce something stunning when they need it. And he did that today in the fourth set tiebreak. He was a mini breakdown. And he came up with the most stunning single-handed, on-the-run, flick backhand pass to get him to 2-1 in that tiebreak. It would have been 3-0 down without it.
I watched the replay six times in a row.
Couldn't believe my eyes how he managed it. And it's little moments like that. It's just greatness. You just, okay, he's still got to achieve everything we think he's going to achieve, but just, I've seen great players do those things, and he's already doing them.
I can't help thinking that this was the banana skin, the early round problem, and having found a way through. Imagine if it dries up and he gets his feet under him properly.
I think he plays Fabio Fognini next.
I mean, that's tough. That's a tough draw. And Fognini is comfortable on grass, and we've seen him cause Murray problems here years ago. But if he can just stay in the event long enough and not be injured and get comfortable,
and the more match time he gets, that's learning time, isn't it? So, and because he's so young, he doesn't have to worry so much about the hours on the clock. You feel like it's just all time
rather
in the classroom,
five setters,
isn't it?
And be able to figure it out more.
Speaking of five setters, we had a fifth set tiebreak. Today, I think we had a couple, but the one I'm talking about here is 7-seed Hubert Hurkacz going out to Alejandro Davidovich Fokina. Always a banana skin, this one. A blooming tough draw for Hurkacz. A Davidovich Fokina, okay, you might not think of him as a grass courter, but he did win juniors at Wimbledon in 2017. And it was the most, I want to think of a non-clear, I don't want to say roller coaster, I don't want to say topsy-turvy, but it was all of those things this match. It was a thrill ride. Alejandro Davidovich Fokina was 2 sets to love, 5-3, 40 love serving.
And this went five.
He went for a completely unnecessary tweener. Fast forward. Well, including rain delay, probably about 3.5 hours. And Hubert Hurkacz is serving for the match in the fifth set.
What was he doing?
Honestly, just another day for Alejandro Davidovich Fokina. He plays these crazy matches. He is a fun time. I mean, he literally couldn't play tennis for about 90 minutes from having match point to Hurkacz serving for the match. His game fell to pieces, and yet suddenly he just snapped back and got it back and ended up winning the final set tiebreak. And it's actually a really big result, I think. I mean,
huge.
Hurkacz was in a section of the draw where I think most people were probably picking him through to at least the quarterfinals, maybe even the semifinals.
Yeah. Semifinal.
Yeah. I think we're all included
in
that.
I've had a good day today. It's gone really well.
There's this weird stat going around about the Haller jinx. Have you seen this?
Yes, all Haller champions except for Federer. Except, is it that good a stat? Because Federer sort of won Haller about 42 times.
But it's the last six other than Federer have all gone out in the first round of Wimbledon. For a while, it was just a collection of Germans. Schreiber,
back when David
Haas
was media director of Queens, he'd have bloody loved that stat.
Oh, yeah, I'd have been dining out on that one.
You'd have been thinking of ways to tweet it without looking sort of bitter.
Correct.
Yeah, Čorić, Meyer, Umber, Hurkacz, Haas and Schreiber now. I don't know what to make of that, except it is a fun stat. But yeah, Davidovic-Fokina, such a fun time. Those two players were at sort of opposite ends of the spectrum for me in terms of how I feel about them in terms of fun on a tennis court. And he's right at the top, Davidovic-Fokina. I can't even say his name. Hrkacz, I don't go out of my way to watch his matches. And yet watching him live, as I did today, was interesting because the ball pings off his strings. He's a very sweet time with the ball. And yet I felt like Davidovic-Fokina was the reason I was there, even though Hrkacz is the higher seed and the one
TV doesn't
go through.
Translate that game, maybe.
Yeah, I don't think
Burdick-y?
So.
Burdick-y.
It is a little bit. It's very clean. It doesn't look like he's swinging hard at the ball.
People who work in tennis and like really into tennis often rave about Hubert Hrkacz as a player to watch, which I have not really been able to get on board with. But I've never watched him live.
He's got this very Andy Murray-like backhand, hasn't he? In fact, there are quite a few elements of his game that resemble Andy Murray's. And yet, I don't think of him as a similar player to Andy Murray at all. I don't think of sort of epic scrambling rallies or anything. But anyway, we won't be playing any more roundies at Wimbledon because he's out.
Who does that open up a massive opportunity for, I wonder?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty good news for Novak Djokovic. I mean, I certainly didn't have Djokovic losing to Hrkacz, but I could have seen a scenario had Hrkacz reached that stage and Djokovic too, where that could be a troubling matchup. He took a set off him, was it 2019, when they met here? And Hrkacz is a far better player now than he was in 2019. And Djokovic, like, he won today, and in the end he won pretty convincingly against Kwon Soon Woo. But he didn't look quite right.
No, not at all. I mean, I thought he was injured when I was watching the match. I genuinely thought this guy is either... I thought he's unwell. He looked unwell to me out there. And there were no sort of histrionics about it, but there was no celebrating winners whatsoever for the three sets that I watched. I didn't watch much of the fourth, that he won quite comfortably in the end. But the first three sets, they got to one set all, three games all. They'd won 63 points each. That's how close this match was. And, I mean, he went 3-1 down in the first set. I thought Kwon was really good. I mean, this is a guy who has not got past the second round at Wimbledon. He's only ever been to one third round at a Grand Slam before. He hadn't reached a third round of any tournament since last September. You know, he had not been in good form, but it was as if he just thought, OK, then, I'm going for broke. And he went after shots. He was hitting the ball cleanly. Djokovic was playing reactive tennis, and we're actually watching some of the coverage back as we talk right now, and I'm seeing Djokovic slice his backhand an awful lot, as if he's just trying to find his range. And then when we spoke to him in the press conference afterwards, no complaints about any physical issues at all. He just said, look, I have not played any matches, and it doesn't matter how much practice you have, how many practice sets you play, you can't replicate it. And he hasn't played since he lost to Rafael Nadal in Paris a month ago. Now, he's won this title a number of times without playing any warm-up tournament, and he could well win this tournament as well. But just like a year ago when he lost first set to Jack Draper, this was a rusty, tense, nervous, anxious Novak Djokovic who found a way to win. But he was far from convincing.
He plays Thanasi Kokkinakis next, which could be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, if Kokkinakis plays well, he could play, maybe a little bit similarly to Hubert Hrkacz or someone like that. I just think the likelihood is that Djokovic is just going to keep getting better because that's what he normally does. But, you know, he can't win the title playing the way he did today. That much is for sure.
It's going to be very interesting, isn't it? If there is that, you know, chink of vulnerability there in the opening rounds, is there somebody that can step up and go, there's an opportunity here? Or will the locker room aura of Novak Djokovic at Wimbledon going for
fourth
consecutive title, will that override the chink?
I was wondering that. Which force is going to win out here? And Djokovic was quite honest in the post-match press conference about the situation being on his mind. He can't pretend that he doesn't know that he might not play another Grand Slam tournament for 11 months if he's not allowed to play the US and the Australian. He was admitting that's a factor here. And he's desperate to win this one.
Andy Murray was also a winner today. Four sets for him against James Duckworth, who hadn't won a main draw tour level match all year ahead of this one. I mean, he's had surgery this year or perhaps at the end of last year on his hip. Two crooked hips on court together, or rather two once crooked hips that have now been somewhat fixed. I think you took this one to four sets just so you could get the winning moment in commentary, David.
And then it ended up being a really anticlimactic sort of match point where there was like an overall and
I think
sort of
James Duckworth stopped play.
That was it, yeah.
Yeah.
James Duckworth.
I do, generally speaking, I do like Hawkeye, but it has ruined a lot of match point moments. Yes.
He
over
made
the
a few mess ups in that match with Hawkeye. Did Duckworth? He played pretty well. I mean, he won the first set. He was playing the aggressive, assertive tennis early on. He got really grouchy, did Duckworth, towards the end of the third set because he said, "I just can't see in the darkness." And he was saying, "Oh, if he asked you to close the roof and put the lights on, you'd do it, but you won't for me because he's Andy Murray." And that's what he was saying to the supervisor. Mm.
And then low level aggro,
indeed. And then after the third set, Murray had won the next those two sets pretty comfortably, 6-3, 6-2. And there is that thing here where when the darkness descends, they can't just put the lights on and carry on playing the match in the outdoors, and that is a bit of a design issue, I think, because you can't maintain the outdoor conditions anymore. You have to close the roof because the lights are embedded in the roof, in the actual thing that comes across.
And Murray's had that quite a lot.
Mm.
Certainly last year he
because
played in that slot on centre court.
That's the BBC
yeah,
slot.
And I don't think he likes it. Because
no, he said it changes the conditions and I would rather be outdoors.
Yeah, and I think he maybe goes a bit cold and then suddenly sort of warming back up again and getting into the match. Like the fourth set was much more of a struggle for him than the previous two sets have been tonight, I think. I didn't see huge amounts of this match, but what I do know, and I know this because I had messages from Catherine in three different WhatsApp groups, was that there was an Andy Murray underarm serve.
I sent the same message to three different WhatsApp groups. I needed an immediate response. I needed to talk to somebody about it immediately.
And it was all in caps. Andy Murray underarm serve.
I loved it. I love that he only hit one all match. And we didn't go to his press conference because it was late and we needed to come back. And
it was the first question,
was
Catherine?
It the first question? Oh.
The moderator got just one in. How was it to be back? And then the first question was, underarm serve. What were you thinking there?
What I want to know, what I would have asked was, had you been thinking all match, I'm going to do an underarm serve at some point?
No, he hadn't been thinking that. He said,
it just came to him.
He said, "I've always thought it's a legitimate tactic." Mm-hmm. Always. You see a lot more of them these days. But he says, "I've never thought there's anything wrong with it. Just like I don't think there's anything wrong with standing 8 metres behind the baseline," as if he was making a point. And he said,
"That's a bit salty, isn't it?"
He said, "Look, I saw him change his return position, and so I thought, okay, well, you can do that, but then I'm going to do this." And he said, "I wouldn't do it if he was standing on the baseline. No chance."
Well, I loved it. He did win the point. It wasn't a sort of simple drew the return error, win the point. It was slightly odd, sort of fun, scrambly point. But one underarm serve, 100% success rate. You know what to do for future matches, Andy. The stats don't lie. His next match, incidentally, will be against John Isner, who went 5 today. Just can't help himself in the first round.
On court 18.
Yeah, went 5 on court 18. He must have been having awful flashbacks.
Yes.
He's a bit
of
a troll.
They troll, isn't
yeah.
there, every year by putting him on court 18.
It draws
it's sort
a
of
crowd.
Making him a tourist attraction, yeah. isn't it?
Yes.
And it's got the plaque on.
The actual plaque with the 70-68 scoreline on it as he walks past to take his place on the court and go 5 again.
Cameron Norrie, the 9th seed, opened up court 2. He beat Pablo Andujar very handily today. Annoyingly for him, he was reined off two points away from victory, but it was 6-love opening set. He was great today, and he was conducting the crowd in his post-match interview. He's really grown into his role as a top player. Some people were a bit eyebrow-raising about the scheduling on court two. You know, top 10 British player. Is that unexpected for them to be on court two? It hadn't occurred to me at the time of it coming out, I have to say.
But I suppose there are people who might say, well, surely he should have been scheduled ahead of Alcaraz, for instance.
That would be
the one. But
his
tennis is so fun and dynamic.
I mean, I'm such an Alcaraz fan that I'm okay with it, but then that's just me.
Yes, that's how I ended up feeling as well. I think, incidentally, Norrie is probably the seed who would benefit the most from her catch going out. Ooh. He's in the Hurkacz 8th, so the one who might reach the quarterfinals from that little section.
But by the way, Catherine, just to say on one of the interesting little tidbit from the Murray press conference was he said physically I felt fine today, there was no issue, and he'd actually had a scan on Saturday just to check whether it had healed, and he said for the first time the scan showed nothing.
Wow!
So that sounds really positive.
That is good news.
Yeah. Well, look, both. I thought it was a slow start from Murray. It took him a long time to start reading the Duckworth serve. James Duckworth was looking like John Isner for the opening set of that match, but he and Raducanu looked physically fine today,
both of them,
which is pretty amazing, really. Quickly, a few other men's results. Casper Ruud got his first ever Wimbledon win.
And a first ever Wimbledon win for the Ruud family.
Oh.
Because Christian, I believe, was 0-5 and Casper was 0-2 coming into this.
Oh, congratulations to the Ruuds. Casper beat Albert Ramos Vinolas. Jannik Sinner beat Stan Wawrinka in four sets. That's a tough draw for Stan Wawrinka, isn't it? It's just never destined to happen for him on grass. Tim van Rijthoven, remember him?
Vaguely.
Yes.
He did a big thing a few weeks ago.
I'm surprised they didn't get him to be in the final.
He has won a Wimbledon match, won a Grand Slam match for the very first time.
Maybe I will then.
He beat Federico Del Bonis.
I was very pleased Wimbledon gave him a wild card, actually.
Yes, me
too. That's the sort of wild card I think should be given, really. Someone who's done an exceptional thing, winning a completely unexpected ATP title. You know, good players don't win ATP titles in their career.
A little bit like the wild card that Ludmila Samsonova received last year. So, congratulations to Tim van Rijthoven, who must just be pinching himself every day at the moment. Before we get on to tomorrow's order of play, let's deal with the trailed talking point of attendance at Wimbledon today. Look, it was well attended. It's Wimbledon. There were a lot of people there. There was good atmosphere. But as I said earlier on, we were expecting it to be feverish, quite frankly, given all factors. And it distinctly wasn't. And again, that is relative to expectation. But it definitely felt slightly lighter on the ground, bodies-wise and atmosphere-wise. So they usually publish and, quite frankly, often make a song and dance about the daily attendance. Of course, when it's an all-time high or higher than on the same day last year, it's quite often put on a board in the media centre. Maybe it still is, but we swung by this evening. Matt, who was treated like a celebrity around the media centre because he used to work on the welcome desk, strolled up to his old mates and said, what's the attendance for today? And they said, we don't have it yet, but we can text you.
Sorry, just to say, it's one of the very few moments where I know people in tennis.
Mm.
And
I love witnessing
you two
it.
Don't.
I love it. Anyway, just as we were leaving, they informed us that the attendance today was 36,000. Now, the capacity is 42,000. So we're thinking, okay, on the way home, we'll once we're back at TP Towers, we'll do some Googling about past attendances. We can sort of take 2021 out of the equation because that's obviously anomalous. Anyway, while we're strolling towards the bus, David and I are chit-chatting. Matt's a few paces behind us. Suddenly we hear Matt on the phone to one of his contacts making inquiries.
Working his sources.
Tell us what you found out, Matt.
Well, something pretty revealing, really, is that attendance, 36,500, something like that, is the lowest first day attendance at Wimbledon, not including last year because of COVID, since 2007. And every opening day since 2011 has been above 40,000. So it's a really significant drop off. And I think we all felt it. As you pointed out, there were some empty seats throughout the day on Centre Court. Little things like, you know, my sister was here today and she got here early to go and watch the first couple of hours on the outside courts. Obviously, it rained and she didn't get to see that much. But little things like it was so easy to just get on court 12 at the start of day, or it was so easy to get on court 3 at the start of day. I've queued for Wimbledon before, and those courts are usually rammed right at the start. And it just wasn't like that. And that got me thinking immediately, what's going on here? It does seem a little bit quiet.
Well, even on Sunday evening, I was in Wimbledon Park where the queue is at about 7 p.m. and it was four rows deep. Now, the rows go on for some 100 meters. You know, it's not a small amount of tents that were there, but it was nothing like what I was kind of expecting. Now, I'm interested to monitor it for the next few days and just see if there's any theme here. And if there's not, I still want to know why. I mean, I don't know whether we'll be able to work that out, but it was strange. The only thing that did occur to me was, are people just out of the habit of queuing? They haven't been able to do this since 2019. There was no queuing in 2021. You know, maybe it's just sort of stopped entering people's consciousness that they can do that. Now, Wimbledon did advertise for it yesterday or the day before. They said, we'll accept people into the queue from 2 p.m. on Sunday. But still, it did feel light even to me last night. But I didn't expect it to feel light on the ground, and it did.
Yeah, look, quite honestly, we don't know, do we? We don't know. We can wildly speculate. But even that feels... I can't even really think of many potential reasons. Cost of living crisis is one that occurs to me. You know, people are significantly poorer than they were in recent times, and Wimbledon is expensive. But then does tend to be quite an affluent crowd at Wimbledon, very generally speaking. I wish it were a less affluent crowd, or certainly a more diverse crowd. That's which is all I can think of, really. But I'm grasping, quite frankly. And I would like to know if you've got any thoughts, listeners, about what it might be. Do get in touch at Tennis Podcast or send us an email. Or if you're somebody that ordinarily would have queued or bought a ticket and you decided not to this year, and it's you don't mind sharing, we'd be very interested to hear from you. Let us know. It's something we'll be tracking over the course of the fortnight. Tomorrow's order of play, very quickly whiz you through that. Świątek, Open Centre Court, the world number one, against Jana Fett of Croatia, who once held match points against Caroline Wozniacki en route to Wozniacki's Australian Open win. Then Francisco Cerúndolo takes on Rafael Nadal. Second on, I don't know why I did that silly roll of my R's. I feel a brat.
Perhaps you were inspired by the guy in the press centre announcing the press conference times for Pablo Carreño Busta. Yep. Will be in the main interview room.
It's great. Did Pablo Carreño Busta win? Because I'd like to hear that again.
No, he didn't.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I think he might have even retired.
He did, actually, yeah.
Poor chap.
Well, I'm glad we enjoyed it while we could. So then it is Serena Williams taking on Harmony Tan.
Those are three players back-to-back. Iga Świątek, Rafa Nadal, Serena Williams, who I'm fascinated to see. You know, for slightly different reasons, but basically, how will they be? Because I think there's very different levels of question marks, but just question marks kind of over all of them for, yeah, different reasons. But be fascinating to see how they all get on tomorrow.
Berrettini against Garin, court one. Then Heather Watson to finish, actually, against Corpatch. What is Corpatch's first name? Do we know?
I think it might be Tamara.
Tamara. It's certainly a T. I think that sounds right. They're tied at a settle. Mukova against Halep, and then Richard of Switzerland. The qualifier takes on Tsitsipas. Goff, Dimitrov, Kvitova, Dan Evans are all on court two. Sakkari, Kyrgios against Job, Auger, Aliassime, Cressy, David. They're on court number three. Oh. And then Muguruza and Karolina Pliskova. Loads going on tomorrow because there's matches that that weren't able to be played today. So we can't wait. We'll have Willow, our Wimbledon mascot, with us throughout. We love Willow. David sends his apologies to Darwin for everything.
Although...
Yes, today went well.
Newsletter predictions.
Wider scheme of things, Darwin. Possibly back with the wrong horse. Carter, it's not going much better, but anyway. No career damaging failures. Although we did pick John Millman and that went very badly. Sorry, Carter. Gerald, the dearly departed Gerald for Matt today. Billie Jean is not at Tennis Podcast Tower today. She'll be back on Friday. She is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. Kyle Weingartner and Chris Albert Lee are our top blokes and executive producers. And Matt, we have Wimbledon Day One shout-outs.
For Eleanor Liederbach in Valley City, Ohio.
Wow!
That's good, isn't it?
That sounds amazing.
Valley City. That sounds like a... the sort of place that a superhero lives in.
Yeah.
You know, like Metropolis or Gotham City.
Like it.
Mm. Thank you, Eleanor.
Indeed.
We have Cynthia, who's in Holland.
Right, Cynthia.
Not enough tennis Cynthias, I would say.
No. Have Holland had any good players of late?
Tim Van Rijthoven.
Talon Griekspoor lost today to Fabio Fognini.
Oh.
Tim Van
Rijthoven, yeah. Kiki Bertens.
Of course. Yeah, who retired last year, didn't she?
Yeah. Probably at the end of our list now. Raymond Slouter.
She'd probably give Richard Krajicek a mention.
Richard Krajicek, 1996. Yeah. Wimbledon champion, he was a good one.
Sorry, Richard.
Went straight in with Tim Van Rijthoven.
Richard's like, oi!
And third and final shout out tonight is Paul Bullock, who is an Englishman living in Malta.
Oh,
we had a
Malta came up the other day.
Yes, we had a Maltese listener the other day, and or somebody who's living there anyway.
Paul's little factoid is that his parents met at a Springsteen concert in Brighton in 1981.
Like it
wow.
a lot.
That's very good, isn't it?
I wonder how many relationships have been formed at Bruce Springsteen concerts. A lot, I think.
I would love to meet the man of my dreams at a Bruce Springsteen concert. Unfortunately, I fear the age bracket is not necessarily...
in your favour.
unless I'm willing to make some significant adjustments to my hopes and dreams for the future. Okay, this has been the day one Wimbledon... Tennis Podcast. We'll be back with 13 more of these. Yes, 13 more, because there are no middle Sundays anymore. Or certainly no restful middle Sundays. There is only tennis between now and a week on Monday. So,
tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
So we hope you're enjoying. Tell your friends, leave us an Apple Podcasts review. If you haven't subscribed to the newsletter, do it. And if you haven't become a friend and want to be able to listen to our two Wimbledon Relived episodes on junior champions and on middle Sundays, then become a friend of the pod. The link is in our show notes, and we'll speak to you tomorrow.